Thank you. I'm Mel Monadic.
Hi, Mel.
Please, if I'm not nervous enough, I'm having a nervous breakdown. Right. I just better talk about myself a bit, I think, to start with. My story kind of goes from being an average kind of girl next door to landing in a prison cell with a woman named Jack. And, you know, it's not glamorous. It's, you know, there's nothing profound in there. It's just, you know, a story of someone who used drugs for a long, long time until, you know, I found NA and I found a way to get clean. And 15 minutes is a very short time to tell you how that thing happens, but, you know, I'll do my best. I usually say my drug taking started when I was about 12 years old, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and actually it wasn't. I think I was about 9, and I used to steal my mother's gin out of the Christmas alcohol cupboard. But, you know, I wouldn't just have a couple of glasses. I remember drinking the whole bottle. And that's kind of how my using went. I wasn't happy until I was comatose, basically. You know, I hear people sharing a lot about that they were hardcore drug users, and I think, is there any other way? I don't know any other way to use drugs, you know. I've never been someone who can just use drugs on a weekend. I've never been someone who can just have a little bit and then have no more, you know. I've got to do it until my head's in the carpet, until I literally cannot move. And when I first came to NA, I didn't understand what being an addict meant. You know, and now I do. And I wanted to know what the explanations for it were, where I got this disease from, who I caught it off, you know, why I had it, whose fault it was, and I'd deal with them. But, you know, it's enough for me to know that when I pick up a mind-altering substance, I cannot stop using. And I accept that fact, and that's what's kept me clean, you know. The beginning of my using was great. I loved it. You know, I hear people talking about horror stories of using, and I don't know why they did it then, because mine was brilliant. I loved it. I loved drugs. You know, for the first few years, it was fantastic. It was my life, and it was all I thought about, and I enjoyed every minute, and I'm not ashamed to say that, you know. If I'd known where it had took me, I'd like to say I'd have done things differently, but I know I wouldn't have. So that'd just be a lie, and I tried to work an honest programme. So when I was around 12 years old, we used to, where we live on the moors and the Pennines, and mushrooms grow freely, and you don't have to pay for them. I think that's kind of why we got into that, and we'd go and collect loads of these things and eat them, and go for long walks on the moors and laugh at the sky for hours on end, you know. And there was some real camaraderie going on there. It was like we kind of went through a journey together, you know. I remember crying when I was coming down. I was that upset. I don't want it to end. And, you know, that's kind of how it started. That's how my drug use started, and it was really, really enjoyable. And I went through all the scenes that were around at the time, you know. I was a football hooligan, for God's sake. I was involved in the acid house party scene that developed around Manchester and around where we live in Blackburn. And, you know, along with all that came drugs. And it wasn't until that ended that, you know, I got into heroin. And yeah, I guess it was heroin and cocaine that brought me to my knees. I don't know. But I don't want to go through all the drugs that I've used, because it'd be easier for me to kind of go through the drugs that I haven't used, because then I'd just be sat here silent, basically. You know, like everybody else, I've been through it all. And, you know, I started using heroin and never realised where I would end up with it, you know. I had a child who was around 2 years old when I started using heroin, and I thought that I could do it all. I thought that I could work and use heroin and be a mother, and that no one would be able to tell. Because I took Valium, and I thought I was invisible, and that I could just do whatever I wanted to do. And you know, it's hilarious when I think the denial in my life was horrendous. You know, I used to go to my son's PTA meetings absolutely off my face, thinking no one could tell because I had a pair of dark sunglasses on, you know, and the fact that my head was on the table might have been a bit of a giveaway, you know, but I thought that I could do all that stuff, and because I had a job and I had a child and I kind of had one foot in the real world, slightly, I thought I was managing to do it all. You know, and my heroin use progressed, and I got into things that I never would have gotten into. You know, I lived with armed robbers. I got involved in crime that was way above my head, you know. But the things that we do just to use drugs. You know, I sold huge amounts of drugs. And that funded my habit, and that sort of materialised and just kept me going, really. It just enabled me to keep a lifestyle that I wanted to have, you know, and I thought it was great. I remember going on holiday once and thinking I was going to go away to get clean. Think, oh, I'll go to Ibiza for 2 weeks to get clean. No sense in that whatsoever. And I remember being on the way out, and I got stopped at customs, and they took me into this little room to give me a strip search. And I'd had it in my hand, and somehow I managed to get it in my mouth and swallow it. So once I'd done that, I was like really, really cocky, thinking, oh, you don't really get it now. So I was like, no, of course I haven't got anything. And they were saying, oh, we believe you're taking heroin out of the country. And I was like, what? Is that a crime? I thought I was doing them a favour. I really did, you know. Like, surely, you know, a bit less drugs on the street. But I did that a few times, you know. I went abroad a few times to try and get clean. And I spent a lot of money coming back after 3 or 4 days after the drugs had run out, believe me. And my heroin use went from smoking it to injecting in every vein in my body. Destroyed my groin. No, I've nearly died so many times, it's unreal. I can't believe that I'm actually sat here tonight. I injected a bacteria into my bloodstream that clogged up my heart valves. It's a condition called endocarditis, and I now suffer with that for the rest of my life, you know. And it's not the only damage that I've done to my body. You know, I've done so, so much. I've gone over so many times. My son, 4 years old, has had to ring the ambulance while I've been, you know, unconscious on the floor so many times. But somehow, for some reason, God kept me alive, and eventually, you know, I ended up in prison. And seriously, with a woman named Jack. And I started off in there the way I was living out on the outside. You know, I was using drugs, I was having parcels brought in. And I was thinking about it on the train on the way down. I remember swallowing a parcel so huge and so heavy that I couldn't bring it up. And after about 16 bottles of salted water, my eyes were bulging out my head like that film Scanners, you know, and it still wouldn't come out. And you know, having to resort to drinking bottles of laxatives and waiting for it coming out the other end and rooting through it. You know, that's what my using was like in jail. It was horrendous. And there was something at some point in jail where I decided that I'd had enough of this. I don't know whether it was because for the first time in my life I'd been taken away from my son, or I just wanted to not be running around for little bits of gel, because little bits of gear in gel because I thought I was better than that, and if there wasn't a gram there, I wasn't interested. So I don't know which one it was, but something made me decide that I didn't want to do it anymore, and I begged them to send me to a rehab, which there aren't many of in the prisons, in the women's prisons, especially up north. And they sent me off to Drake Hall to this rehab, and it wasn't a 12-step rehab. You know, they believe in supervised drinking, which I kind of don't understand. I used to get supervised methadone. I don't know if it's anything like that. Do they like stand there and watch you drink it? I don't know how it works. But I had time to sit there and think about what my life had become, and you know, maybe make a change. I've been clean for about 6 months, and I kind of hit a rock bottom. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I didn't want to go back to the life that I'd had before. And I didn't know if there was a future out there for me. You know, I felt completely worthless. I had no self-esteem. And now I had a criminal record. And it was then, there, probably that very day, that a friend of mine who I'd known since school, since I was like 4 years old, he'd been in this program for a long time, sent me a basic text and some share CDs of himself. which, you know, I listened to intently, and I thought, yeah, I'll give this a go. You know, if it worked for him, it might work for me. But no, you know, that was a powerful thing in itself. I hadn't seen this guy for a lot of years, and he had a very special life. You know, everything was going good for him, and for him to remember, you know, where we'd been when we were kids, and to remember me and to reach out to me like that was a powerful thing in itself. You know, and I got out of prison, and I remember he rang me up and said, are you going to go to a meeting? And I thought, I don't need a meeting. I've just been in treatment for 6 months. I'm having a break from recovery. Mm. Yeah, and he was like, you can't have a break. There's no break from this disease. And I remember I'd had a glass of champagne with my family to celebrate my homecoming, and he was saying, have you used? I was saying, no. I've had a glass of champagne. And I blamed him for months for stealing my 11 months clean time, and I've only just come to terms with it, you know, that I'm actually only 2 years, 2 months clean, and not 3 years, 3 months. And from going to my first meeting, I genuinely did get some amazing willingness from somewhere. You know, I wasn't honest, I wasn't open-minded, but I was willing. I really had enough. You know, I thought, I heard people share, I heard the stories that they told that were similar to mine, and I thought, well, if they can do it, then, you know, I'll give it a go. And it's just been fantastic from then on. I had a tag on. I couldn't get to as many meetings as I would have liked to have gone to. I could only go to one a week because the prison would only let me have that much time on my tag out of the house. So I got a sponsor, and she was down here and I was up north, and we did all our work via email and on the phone, which kind of worked out better because we had set times to do stuff, so I couldn't avoid it. It wasn't like, oh, the sponsor just lives around the corner, I'll go next week. You know, we really got stuck in, and you know, the steps were the saviour for me. All of this program's important, you know, sponsorship, service, meetings. But for me, it was the steps to begin with. And I just ploughed through my step work, you know, and I got all 12 steps done within the first year. And learned a hell of a lot from this amazing woman, who I still learn a hell of a lot from. I took on service at H&I, which is a subject really close to my heart. I took on service at group level. various subcommittees. It's amazing I've still got hair, really, isn't it? Has anybody been on any subcommittees? I don't know what they're like down here. You know, time for another step for Louise. And that's kind of how I did it. I just tried to work these steps into my life. I was a selfish, vengeful, fearful, self-piteous person when I first came out of treatment, with no self-esteem, no courage, no. And in 2 years, I've got all of that back. You know, I have a job, I'm ploughing through a university degree. You know, the future's so bright at the moment. I've rebuilt family ties that I thought would be impossible to build. You know, my family make me proud every day as much as I make them proud. You know, I'm the mother I always wanted to be. And I have a fantastic relationship with my 17-year-old son. And those were the things that I wanted. You know, I didn't want the shiny stuff. In fact, all I wanted was a decent night's sleep, really, when I first came around. But, you know, now I just want some peace of mind, and I get that. And it's not easy, you know. That I've had a lot of shit in recovery. People keep dying. You know, and I've had a lot of things to deal with in the first 2 years, but I've had a lot of good stuff as well, you know. And all that we're promised when we come around is a life free of drugs and the chance to live life on life's terms. You know, and I now take responsibility for my disease, you know, well, for my recovery. I don't use my disease as an excuse. And I try to focus on, you know, doing the things that I can do and not letting them stop me do the things that I can't. And not being obsessed about, and all that stuff that, you know, that you work into your program. That's individual to everybody, I suppose, but, you know, but what I get a feeling from NA that I've never got from anywhere else. You know, I get an identification with people. I get a feeling that people have actually been through what I've been through, and I actually listen. Although I will say it did take 10 years. They did try to tell me 10 years ago and I didn't hear it. I just didn't hear it. You know, I have a faith in a higher power. I have sponsees. I never thought I'd have a faith in anything. I never believed in anything or anyone unless it could get me high, basically. But now I do, you know. And long may it continue. And I'll just finish on this. I seem to have spent my whole life searching for something that, you know, isn't there. And what I've learned is, what, you know, when things were going good, there was always something missing. And now, when things are bad, I know everything's going to be all right. I'll leave it there.